Hey, it's Jen Hatmaker. Here's what I've learned in midlife. Joy isn't the reward you earn after all the work is done. Joy is the work. That's what this new series on For the Love is all about. The sacred, yes. It's choosing delight, rest, and pleasure on purpose. Because saying yes to yourself, that's the thing that finally lets you fill your table with everybody else. Come find your sacred yes with me. Follow and listen to For the Love wherever you get your podcasts.
The following podcast contains explicit language.
Down beneath Lincoln Financial Field, below the stands and concourse level, the Eagles locker room is laid out by position. Jalen Hurts and the quarterback's lockers are in the upper left corner of the room, farthest from the main entrance. Lane Johnson and the offensive line are on the opposite side in the upper right corner. Down in the left part of the room, just outside the door to the head coach's office, is where you'll find the defensive line. And after the Eagles' 22-21 loss to the Atlanta Falcons Monday night, the area was packed with reporters. The D-line had a lot of questions to answer.
We just didn't make the plays to win the game, and as a defense, we was embarrassed.
You just got to move on from this and learn and play better.
We've been working our asses off. The effort's there, and the want to is there. But at the end of the day, like, we haven't got pressure, so we got to find somebody better.
2 games into the new season, the lack of production from the Eagles' defensive line has quickly emerged as a major weakness. It cost them against Atlanta, especially in the final minutes when they couldn't get to the quarterback. The play of the defensive line was also a problem the week before against Green Bay. Both the Packers and the Falcons punished the Eagles on the ground for over 150 yards, while the pass rush generated few sacks and quarterback hits. The issues are obvious to anyone watching, whether you're a fan, player, or coach.
Can somebody please tell me, where the hell is the pass rush? You got an immobile quarterback who cannot move, but yet we get one sack.
I don't know. Not on the same page, man. We got to be together. You know what I'm saying?
We'll look at the tape of this game, and we'll see with what it is.
The tape's out there, and it ain't great. What can the Eagles do to get this right? How can they get more out of defensive line that went into the season with high expectations? It's only 2 games into the year, but is it too soon to ask? What if the line needs more than coaching and practice reps? What if the talent on this defensive line just isn't good enough? What happens then? What questions need to be asked of General Manager Howie Roseman and the role he played in building this group, from evaluating talent to spending money? I'm Jeff McClain, and this is Uncovering the Birds, a production of the Philadelphia Inquirer and KYW News Radio original podcast, with new episodes dropping every week. That's right, every week during the regular season. Coming up, we'll take a closer look at Nick Sirianni's role in the Eagles' Week 2 loss. And with Nick Foles formally retiring during halftime of Monday night's game, we'll go back to an overlooked moment late in his career that I still keep asking myself, what if? But first, we're going to go straight to the defensive line. Why it hasn't been effective, who's to blame, and whether we should expect change. It's Tuesday, September 17th. We're in the studio the day after the Eagles' stunning 22-21 loss to the Atlanta Falcons. They're now 1-1, and talk about rough timing. Up next, they got a difficult road game off a short week against one of the surprise teams in the league so far, the Saints. New Orleans is 2-0, has outscored opponents by 62 points, has a running back in Alvin Kamara who's looking like his old self, and quarterback Derek Carr operating under little duress, making it all the more dire for the Eagles to get this defensive line situation right. So let's start there. When it comes to roster building, isn't that where the Eagles have traditionally said they always start? In the trenches? But the offseason concerns I voiced here on Uncovering the Birds about the D-line, in particular on the edges, are becoming very apparent after just 2 games. The front has been leaky in stopping the run, and the pass rush has been virtually non-existent. Milton Williams is the only D-lineman who's recorded a sack. He got it against Atlanta. The other two belong to linebacker Zach Bond from the opener against the Packers. Sacks don't tell the entire story, but Monday night, and a mobile Kirk Cousins often had all kinds of time in the pocket, especially on the Falcons' game-winning drive.
Cousins back. Cousins looking. Puts it in the air. Touchdown. I cannot believe what has happened.
They just allowed them to march directly downfield.
So what are the issues? For one, the guy the Eagles had expected to be their linchpin, Jalen Carter, hasn't delivered. He wasn't even on the field for the first defensive series. Why? According to leaked sources, Carter was punished for being late to something team-related last week. It makes you wonder, if Carter is showing signs of being undisciplined off the field, is that carried over in between the lines? In the first game versus the Packers, Carter saw a lot of double teams. He faced his share versus the Falcons, but not as many, because All-Pro guard Chris Lindstrom was able to neutralize them for most of the night. Carter spoke about the Eagles' lack of pressure against the Falcons afterwards.
It's very frustrating. You know, no game is perfect for me. No game is good for me. I always got a higher standard for myself and what I want to do. You know, if I have a game where I have 3 sacks, why not 6? You feel me? So that's just my mindset with it.
If Carter is going to draw most of the attention or an O-line's best blocker, the other guys up front have to make plays, like Jordan Davis. Davis is Carter's former teammate at Georgia. To this point, he hasn't justified the Eagles trading up for him in the first round. He's a gap-eating nose tackle when the Eagles are in a five-man front, but his biggest weakness is that he lacks pass rush skills. Conditioning was also an issue in his first 2 seasons, and it's fair to wonder, at this early stage of his career, if he'll ever have the necessary motor to log a significant number of snaps. When deep reserve Thomas Booker has more solo tackles than your 2 first-rounders combined, despite playing significantly fewer snaps, you know something's wrong.
We'll obviously look at this game and see what happened. I think sometimes you have to earn the right to rush, meaning you got to have them in passing situations. It didn't seem like we had some passing situations today. They were in third and manageable or second and manageable. So sometimes you got to earn the right to rush.
But the greater deficiency on the Eagles' D-line is at the edges. They don't have close to what you'd consider a game changer. They invested $51 million in Bryce Huff, but the former New York Jet has had little impact thus far. I chose him as my stock down player during camp, but at that point, attributed his lack of production in practice to facing Eagles tackle Lane Johnson. But he's been just as ineffective when it matters. Huff has 1 assisted tackle in 2 games. He has yet to touch a quarterback. He mentioned the scheme change affecting his performance. That's a fair point to make, but only as it relates to his run defense. Huff has been slow to execute defensive coordinator Vic Fangio's tactics for setting the edge. But Fangio's scheme can't be used as an excuse for his pass rushing absence. Huff's job in that role is simply to beat the man in front of him and get to the quarterback, just like he did in New York. His 3.3% win rate through 2 games is approximately 75% lower than it was last season. He told reporters after the game he knows what the perception is right now.
I know I have to do better as a whole. I got to do a better job of using my arsenal and not just giving them the same rush every time. I have to be able to mix up the rush as well as on my individual rushes.
It's early, of course, but Josh Sweat has played in the Eagles scheme for 4 seasons. He's been the Eagles' most effective edge rusher so far, but he's not a number one. If the Eagles thought he was more than that, they wouldn't have brought him back on a reduced contract. To offset the loss of Hassan Reddick, they leaned on a collective group approach. But their backups, Brandon Graham and Nolan Smith, have been just as MIA. Graham is in his 15th and final season. And even if Fangio said last week that Graham is still productive, the Eagles shouldn't be relying on a 36-year-old as much as they already have.
Brandon's still a good player. And I've told him several times, he's not on any ceremonial last year retirement parade. He's going to play.
Smith, meanwhile, is undersized and has had trouble beating even tight ends. He has just 1 sack and 3 hits in his first 19 NFL games. All of this ultimately calls into question general manager Howie Roseman's personnel decisions and salary cap allocation. For the first time in a long time, the Eagles aren't in the top 10 when it comes to positional spending at interior D-line and on the edges. Some of that has to do with having so many young players. Roseman has invested draft capital on the D-line. He still follows the template set forth by his mentors, Andy Reid and Joe Banner, to emphasize the big guys up front. But he's tipped the Eagles' scales more than ever in giving big money deals to so many offensive skill position players beyond the quarterback. Should Roseman have paid Reddick instead? The Jets have refused to rework his contract, and he's still holding out. But the bigger mistake may have been in how Roseman went about replacing someone who was good for double-digit sack numbers and had big plays and big moments. Josh Sweat might have summed it up best inside the Eagles' locker room after the Falcons' loss. He painted the picture of a puzzle with pieces that don't fit.
Practice. Go back to practice. That's all, I mean, shit, dude. That's all we can really do. I mean, we can talk all we want, but we ain't going to go out there and do it together. It ain't going to happen. So.
Do you think it's like guys pressing it, or what do you think the issue is that's leading to it?
I don't know.
It's too early to panic. Patience is necessary with young players, but the Eagles could be running low on time, especially with a potent offense in New Orleans looming this week. I could have focused on the many areas where the Eagles faltered on Monday night. The offense, which looked so potent in Brazil, was missing something with receiver A.J. Brown out with a hamstring strain. Quarterback Jalen Hurts clearly was affected by his favorite target's absence, but he also made big throws and found his sea legs on the ground for the first time in a long time. His game-ending interception was a killer, but if Saquon Barkley had caught a Hurts pass that hit him right in the hands on 3rd-and-3, the Eagles would have likely clinched the win.
Hurts into a long count. He is rolling. He throws the football, and it's dropped! He put it into the hands of Barkley.
That's a pretty sure play. I like the play call here. Everything is there except the catching of the football, Saquon Barkley.
That was one mistake that Barkley made.
It's just out of character.
Nick Sirianni's decision to throw the ball in that situation has drawn criticism. My column off the game in the Inquirer, which you can find linked in the show notes, focused more on the coach not going for it on 4th down on the very next play when the analytics suggested he decreased the Eagles' win probability by kicking a field goal instead. But there's another play that needs to be reassessed. The first 3rd-and-3 play when the Eagles tried to get the Falcons to jump, and might have, if only tackle-eligible Fred Johnson had touched Matthew Judon to draw the flag. Sirianni denied that Johnson did something wrong, but according to team sources, he was in fact upset with the reserve offensive lineman and yelled at him from the sideline before turning his ire on offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland. A lot has been made of Sirianni's temperament, but he has been more subdued during games this season. In that moment, he understandably lost his cool. But with the Eagles 1-1 and coming off a stinging loss, he only has himself to blame for the questionable game management. And lastly, the state of his team after a sloppy start to the season. Coming up, assessing Vic Fangio and whether he's the defensive mastermind some have claimed him to be. But next, Sunday will be the Eagles' first time back at the Superdome in New Orleans since Nick Foles' infamous last game in the 2019 playoffs. I asked him and others what his fate might have been had Alshon Jeffrey caught Foles' final pass in Midnight Green. You want hometown coverage that's just as obsessed with Philly sports as you are? Then access your obsession 24/7 only at Inquirer.com/sports. Get in the huddle with over 40 expert reporters and editors, all covering your Birds and other Philly teams. Catch all the insights, analysis, and much more only at Inquirer.com/sports.
Hey, this is Brian Seltzer. I love producing Uncovering the Birds and working with Jeff, just like I love working on the other podcasts we produce at KYW News Radio. We just launched a brand new show. It's called The Week in Philly. Pretty self-explanatory. It looks back and ahead at the biggest stories in the Philadelphia region with a longer lens than what you might hear on the radio. We've also got Gone Cold, exploring unsolved murders in the city. The Gone Cold team released a fantastic miniseries called Ricochet. It examines all the angles of the city's gun crisis. You got to check it out. Bridging Philly brings you stories that connect communities on the issues that matter most to you. And One-on-One has great conversations with people in sports you should absolutely know more about. So give the full slate of KYW News Radio original podcasts a listen. Download the free Odyssey app and follow KYW News Radio for Philly's best original podcasts right at your fingertips.
I'm Jeff McClain, and this is Uncovering the Birds.
Hello, Nick Foles, quarterback to Philadelphia.
I like what Andy Reid just did, getting Nick Foles. All-time leading passer in Arizona. He's their team captain.
I'm fortunate to be here with the Philadelphia Eagles. I have to plug my blood every single day to show these guys that I deserve to be here.
It was unanimous with our coach. I mean, they all liked the jersey to get him in here and put him on the football ground.
Foles fakes to McCoy. He is going deep for DeSean Jackson, and it is caught down inside the 10. Another bomb. Foles, does he get that 7th touchdown pass? He looks, still looks, fires, touchdown, tying the Eagles' all-time record. Foles moves to the right. It goes directly to Clement, reverses it, and the pass goes into the end zone. Touchdown by Nick Foles.
To be a part of the Philadelphia Eagles, to be a part of these guys, one of the greatest things I've ever done in my life. It is an honor for us to bring y'all to the Super Bowl. We finally did it. We're Super Bowl champs.
We'll get back to the present and try to fix the Eagles' ills in a moment. But first, with Nick Foles officially retiring from the NFL during halftime of Monday night's game, I wanted to take a quick detour to the not-so-distant past. Let's go back to Foles' final game in an Eagles uniform. Divisional playoff round 2019 in New Orleans. The Eagles, trying to get back to the Super Bowl after winning it the year before. They're down 20-14, driving deep into New Orleans territory at the Saints 27 with 2 minutes left.
Foles, he steps up, he lets it fly, and it is intercepted! It is intercepted! It is picked off and going back with the football to the 34-yard line. The Saints have it. It is Marshawn Lattimore, and that may be the game.
This ball goes right through the hands of Alshon Jeffrey and into the hands of Marshawn Lattimore.
Of all the Foles highlights we could have played, why this one? Nearly 6 years later, that play still lingers as one of the biggest what-if moments in Eagles history. What if Alshon Jeffrey had made that catch? What if the Eagles went down and scored? What if they had gone on to beat the Rams to set up a rematch with the Patriots in Super Bowl 53? What if the Eagles had gone back-to-back? Last week, I talked to several figures who were with the Eagles when Foles was still playing about that big what-if moment in New Orleans. Lane Johnson was playing alongside him for both of his stints in Philadelphia. He still remembers the feeling he and others had whenever Foles commanded the huddle, like he did during another postseason run in 2018.
What do you remember about Nick in that game, and did you think that would be the end of him in Philadelphia?
No, I didn't. Fuck, it's one of those games that, you know, is a really catch away, a couple of big plays away from, you know, we're playing the Rams in the NFC Championship game, so I feel like everybody felt that. You know, one thing I say about Nick is that I feel like everybody in the locker room loved him. He had a magnetic pull when it came to just, you know, people migrated towards him. And I think a lot of it came down to, you know, he's a quarterback, and I feel like he didn't have a whole lot of ego. So, you know, he had other interests outside of football, obviously, and that was a big part of his life. And so I felt like, you know, with that, the team was able to compete and had probably as little stress on him as possible. So, you know, the dude battled. I mean, nothing was given to him. You know, he had his first stint here.
You were there for both.
Yeah,
you're the only guy now.
Yeah. I mean, I was there for the first stint. He did well. Then we got an opportunity for him to come back, and you know, the situation unfolded how it did, which something out of a movie seemed like. So, yeah, that year went by really fast. But I think what people remember is just how Nick made them feel.
Brandon Graham said the loss in New Orleans still sticks with him and reminds him not only of how it nearly ended his tenure with the Eagles, but how it ended up being Foles' last game in midnight green.
The blood, sweat, and tears of that year of, dang, boy, it was hard because, you know, everybody was talking about the Super Bowl hangover, and then we was in a position again to make a run, and things would be different if we didn't get that turnover and things, because I didn't even know my position at that point on where I was going to be.
Yeah, I remember.
You know
that.
What I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I was saying bye to everybody, too. But happy to see, you know, how everything panned out for him.
Did you think that that was going to be the last game for him?
Nah, that wasn't even across my mind. If anything, retirement, yeah. But at that time, heck, you know, he was trying to get some more money. So I understood that situation, too.
You know, there's a lot of fans that now look back on that and say they should have kept Foles and not kept Wentz. I guess it's easier to say.
They were saying Wentz at that time. So just stand on whatever it was that you believed at that time. I mean, you know, it sucked for Nick, but you knew he had to go get paid somewhere, too.
Last one. What's your favorite Nick memory or Nick moment?
Him having his baby girl up there with the headphones on and, you know, winning that Super Bowl.
Yep. All right. Thanks, BJ. Foles did a press conference with the media before Monday night's game against the Falcons. I brought this topic up with him and asked what he thought all these years later. Did he think he deserved to stay over Carson Wentz?
Nick, when you were traded in 2019, it seemed overwhelmingly most people just felt that Carson deserved to stay and for you to go. There were a course of people, though, that felt that you should have been given the job based upon how you performed. There's probably been a little bit of revisionist history on that, too, with more people saying that they thought you should have stayed. But at the time, did you think in your heart that maybe you deserved a chance to remain the starter?
Context is everything. The context of that situation is, unfortunately, Carson had several unfortunate injuries, and, you know, he was playing some great ball, and, you know, when I stepped in, I was able to play great ball with my teammates. We had a great team both years, and I knew at the end of that, talking to Howie, that the decision to go with Carson, like, I understood it. There's not a moment I didn't, like, oh, why? No, I understood it. I understand the game. Carson's a young player, and how he was playing, and, you know, his ceiling so high, there was never that doubt. Yes, like when you look back, would I have loved to play my entire career here? Absolutely. Like, I used to dream wearing midnight green when I wasn't here, but I understood that was the right decision at the right time with the context. But I'm also grateful that I got to go to those different spots. I got to meet so many people. So the history is the history, and, you know, you can't go back and change it, but I understood why they made a decision. I was okay with it.
After you left the Eagles, Foles played 4 more years in the NFL. In total, he played for 7 different teams, but he obviously never matched the success that he had here. Longtime offensive line coach Jeff Stoutland has seen a lot in his dozen years with the Eagles. I caught up with him a few days before the Falcons game and asked him to explain Foles' magic here.
Have you ever seen like a quarterback like in his type of his status have so much success with one team and then away from that team not have it? And there must have been something that was just kismet or whatever it was that with Nick here.
No man is an island. You must draw your strength from others. You want to talk about the quarterback sneak play. You want to talk about any of the things we're doing or organized mass. It can't happen. It has to be everybody. I think that for whatever reason, Nick was meant to be here. Nick had you could feel it when he was in the game. You felt him like he was in the game. When he went in, you could feel him like, we're going to be all right. Nick's in the game.
This is a question I've always wanted to ask Nick ever since he left in 2019, but never had the chance until Monday. What was it about the Eagles in Philadelphia that brought out the best in him?
I'm sure you've been asked this a lot, but why did it work here?
There was just something about wearing midnight green. I always felt something different in the city, in the stadium. I can't really answer that other than say, like, I was just meant to play here, and I'm so grateful to have been a part of these teams, and I'm grateful to be a part of the history here. It's made me a better person playing here.
One of the biggest reactions from the crowd Monday night wasn't for anything that happened in the game, but when they showed the Philly special during Foles' retirement ceremony. It made you think just how far removed the Eagles are now from their title run, and especially against the Falcons, how they could have used some guys up and down the roster with Foles' DNA to stay steady late in the game and close out a win in the clutch. Looking ahead to this weekend in New Orleans, plenty of people have an opportunity for redemption. It wasn't just the players who didn't get the job done down the stretch. Vic Fangio's play calling kept giving Kirk Cousins a clean pocket and the quarterback's receivers too much space underneath Fangio's deep zones. His bend-but-don't-break scheme has given up a lot of yards, but at least the defense has been decent in the red zone. Fangio's system has produced top units in the past, but it's been several stops since the 66-year-old coordinator has had a group that's been among the best in the NFL. Has he lost his fastball? Does he need elite talent? Something he clearly doesn't yet have here to have a dominating defense. Or is it too early to be worried about someone with a proven track record over the last three decades? Sunday's game versus the Saints offense that leads the league in scoring will offer more answers to those questions. We'll be back next week to recap week three. This has been Uncovering the Birds, a production of the Philadelphia Inquirer and KYW News Radio original podcast. Our producer is KYW News Radio's Brian Seltzer. Tom Rickert is KYW News Radio's director of podcasting. The executive producer from the Philadelphia Inquirer is Renee Eiffel. Special thanks to Sports Radio 94 WIP and EJ Smith from the Inquirer. If you're enjoying Uncovering the Birds, please leave us a rating and a review. Listen to Uncovering the Birds free on the Odyssey app, wherever you get your podcasts, or go to inquirer.com/podcasts. I'm Jeff McClain. You can follow me on X at Jeff_McClain or search for my name on any social media platform. Thanks for listening.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show, How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend, Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.